Okay, as we're all settling in, I'd like to thank Jake and Karen Abelevitz. Where's Jake?
Oh, there he is.
I want to thank Jake and Karen Abelevitz for sponsoring the shiur and the lunch today. Actually, every Wednesday at 11:45, maybe not quite as elaborate as this, but every Wednesday at 11:45, Jake and Karen sponsor a lunch and learn, usually on the Parsha. And today, as in the other days, it is Lezecher Nishmas, Jake's parents, Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah Bas Avraham. So we want to thank you, Jake and Karen, for offering us this opportunity and so many opportunities across the year. So in honor of Hanukkah and in honor of today being a day off that maybe people have a little bit more time on their hands, we are having a more elaborate lunch and learn today. And the topic is the tragedy and promise of Yanai HaMelech. Yanai HaMelech is, I would argue, one of the lesser known people in Jewish history. Yanai was actually, I mean, he's not entirely unknown and unfamiliar, but he actually plays a pretty significant role, directly and indirectly, and his life has a legacy which I think is relevant to us. And we, in addition to the message that we can learn from his life, we actually live in a certain sense the ripples, even to this very day and age, of his actions 2,000 years ago. So who was Yanai HaMelech? Yanai was a great-grandson of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Yochanan Kohen Gadol's son was Matisyahu Chashmonai. His grandson was Yehuda HaMakabi. And Yehuda and his and the Maccabi band of brothers, and one of the Maccabim was Shimon, and he had a son Yochanan Hyrcanus, and he had a son Alexander Yanai, and this is the Yanai that we're talking about. Rabbi Milton Polin, Alav Hashalom, once commented that it is an interesting historical development that you can see in just a few generations. The first generation, Matisyahu, stood strong for the tradition, for Torah, for God and country. And Matisyahu had a Hebrew name. His son was Yochanan Hyrcanus. It was bifurcated. He was John Hyrcanus. Yochanan is a Jewish name, and Hyrcanus was a Greek name. And then by the time you get to the third generation, Alexander Yanai, it's entirely a Greek name. And he says the names, although not necessarily determinant, but are certainly reflective of a certain assimilation, if you will, acculturation, and departure from tradition. And the truth of the matter is, by the time we do get to Alexander Yanai, at a certain point of his life, he does wreak tragedy and havoc on the Jewish people. Matisyahu threw off the Greek reign, and Alexander Yanai's own children, Aristobulus and Hyrcanus themselves, reintroduce foreign rule to Eretz Yisrael. But I want to focus on Alexander Yanai. He was, according to some accounts, the first king of Israel. Matisyahu threw off Greek reign, but he did not assume the title of king per se. Some suggest his father, Yochanan Hyrcanus, was already the first king, or maybe his brother, Aristobulus, was the first king. But certainly by the time we get to Alexander Yanai, he is not just a priest in Israel, he is not just a Kohen, even functioning as Kohen Gadol, but he also asserts the power of the Melucha, the power of the monarchical power. And the Ramban points out that this confluence, if you will, of politics and religion, although not exactly, but this confluence of the monarchy and the Kohen Gadol that was assumed not by Alexander Yanai, but by his grandparents, the Maccabim, that was really already the seeds of their destruction. That the Ramban says that really the Melucha should have been left for Shevet Yehuda, and the Kahuna for Shevet Levi. And the Maccabim, the Chashmonaim, these were from Shevet Levi. They were priests, they were Kohanim, and they certainly had a claim on the Kahuna. But they should not have taken, at least maybe if temporarily, they should not have taken, certainly permanently, hold of the reins of civil political power as well. And so the Ramban says that this is really ultimately the cause, the seeds for the destruction of the Hasmonean rule. And ultimately, Alexander Yonai does a good bit to undermine the authority and the legitimacy of the Hashmonai dynasty. So let's talk a little bit about Alexander Yonai. Who was Alexander Yonai? Now, it could be that the entire shiur that I'm going to present right now is null and void at the outset. And the reason that that might be the case is because I'm going to look at various stories. We're going to look together at various stories in the Gemara about Alexander Yonai. But some suggest that you cannot really look at these stories as a composite whole, because in fact, Alexander Yonai was sort of like Paro, a title. And there are many kings with that name. But I'm going to operate on the premise, at least for the stories that I've selected, that Alexander Yonai in one story is the same Alexander Yonai in the other story. So let's start with a dip into the life of Alexander Yonai. And as sometimes occurs for those of you who come to my regular Wednesday shiur, the sources are not entirely in order. So let's start on page 3. Let's start on page 3. Gemara tells us in Croesus of the following story of Yonai, Yonai HaMelech, and his queen, Shlom Tzion. Just another sort of little bit of a historical note here. Yonai's brother, Aristobulus, was the king prior to Yonai. He was another son of Yochanan Hyrcanus. And his brother had a very, very short reign, ruled for a year or less. And then his wife, Shlom Tzion, remained at the helm. However, according to Jewish law, the law of Yibum, since there were no children that emerged from the union of Aristobulus and Shlom Tzion, so Alexander Yonai, then following the laws of Yibum, married Shlom Tzion. And they became the power couple running the country. Shlom Tzion in Jewish rabbinic tradition was a pious woman. After Alexander Yonai's death, her years of reign are considered golden years for the Jewish people. But so he was married to a sister-in-law, basically. Okay, so Yonai HaMelech. Source on page 3, the Gemara in Croesus. The Gemara tells us the following. The context is not that important. Yonai HaMelech, Yonai the king and the queen were sitting and discussing food, right? Because as Jews, what do Jews do? They discuss food. So Amru, they said, Nishai Leli Yisachar Ish Kvar Bar Koy, the Kohen Gadol, who... we're going to ask Yisachar the question that they were dealing with. And what was the major question that they were dealing with? So I'll just read the English over here. The king said that goat is better meat than lamb, and the queen said that lamb is better meat than goat. This was what was going on at their Shabbos table, apparently. A big fight broke out. Is goat better than lamb, or lamb better than goat? So they said, so we'll ask Yisachar, from the Kfar Barkai. He is a Kohen Gadol and is very familiar with various dishes. So they asked him, and he said, if goat meat were better, then it would be sacrificed daily as part of the Karban Tamid, the daily offering. However, the fact that the Karban Tamid does not is lamb and not goat proves that lamb meat is preferable to goat. Okay. As he spoke, he signaled with his hand, and the king said to his attendants, since he signaled with his hand, and he signaled in a contemptuous way, so they should sever Issachar's right hand. So Issachar gave a bribe, a little shochad, and so instead of severing his right hand, the king had him sever his left hand. So the king heard that Issachar had deceived him and had his left hand cut off instead of his right hand by offering a bribe, and he said to the official, to the tsar, sever his right hand as well. So the story concludes, Rav Yosef said, blessed is the merciful one who took retribution on Issachar of the village of Barkai. His punishment fit his crime, since he would not dirty his hands with sacrificial blood. Both his hands were severed. Now, the question of whether this was an appropriate punishment from some cosmic realm for an avera that he did is a separate question. But my point is that right off the bat, we get to see a little bit of the nature of Yanai HaMelech. Even in those days, you know, when a king was absolute power, to sever a person's hand because he didn't like the answer, he didn't like the way the person was conducting himself, was pretty harsh. And then to find out that he had his left hand severed rather than his right hand severed, and he told them to sever both of his hands as a consequence, sort of gives us immediately a sense that this guy was rather cruel. So Yanai HaMelech seems to be a pretty tough and cruel person, just from the face level of the Gemara and Krisos. Again, these Gemaras can each be understood and analyzed on their own for various messages, but my purpose of citing these stories is not for the message of the story, but to tell us something about Yanai. So that's our first Gemara. Flip the page. Go to page 4. The Gemara tells us, Gemara in Kiddushin, Samech Vav, Amar Abaye. Abaye tells us the following story. He's trying to teach a certain lesson, and he says the following. Detanya, Maisa b'Yanai HaMelech, a certain story happened regarding Yanai the king. Shehalach lekuchlis shebamidbar, v'kibe sham shisha krachim, uv'chazaraso hayasameach simcha gedola. Yanai went to the village of, to the area of Kuchlis, and he conquered their 60 cities, and upon his return, he was very happy. Amar lahem avoseinu, hayu ochlim meluchim bizman shayu asukim bevinyan beis hamikdash. Our forebears, said Yanai, would eat delicacies. This is the makor, this is the source for having deli, salted meat, right? It says right here, the hayu ochlim meluchim, that they would have deli in the mikdash when they were involved in building the Beis HaMikdash. So af anu nochal meluchim, so we too will eat salted meat, i.e., I think that's deli. So it doesn't say whether it's pastrami or corned beef, but suffice it to say that that's what they're eating. So zecher lavoseinu b'helu meluchim al shulchanos shel zahav, and they would offer this salty meat on these golden tables. It says we too, we're going to do the same. We're going to do the same thing. Ubliya, v'chlevahaya sham ishechad, and there was a certain fellow there. Let's lev ra ubliyal. He was a scoffer. He was a cynic. He was a bad guy. And Elazar ben Poira shmo, and his name was Elazar ben Poira. Vayomer Elazar ben Poira liyanai hamelech, and Elazar ben Poira says to Yanai the king. He says, King Yanai, the hearts of the Pharisees are not with you. Libam shall perushim. Libam shall perushim alecha. Says they are against you. So, in other words, there was a power struggle going on in the kingdom at the time between the perushim and the tzedukim. And the Prushim seemed to have been the majority. The Tzedukim, the Sadducees, were the minority. And apparently, Yanai HaMelech was either identifying as a Tzeduki, or at least he was partial to the Tzedukim, or at the very least, he was neutral. He didn't take positions over one over the other. So this Elazar ben Parira is a little bit of a koch lefel, trying to stir the pot. And he says to Yanai, the Purushim are not with you. So he says, so what should I do? So he says, I have a good idea. He says, you should walk around with the frontlets. There was the tzitz was one of the crown, like a mini crown, the tiara that the Kohen Gadol would wear, and it had the Shem Hashem on it, and people would have to stand in your presence. So fine. So hakam lahem b'tzit shebeinei necha, hekim lahem b'tzit shebeinei nav. So he walked amongst the people wearing the tzitz. Hayasham zakein echad v'Yehuda ben Gedidya shmo. There was a sage, an old man who, and Gedidya was his name. Vayomer Yehuda ben Gedidya liyanai. Gedidya says to Yanai, Yanai hamelech, Rav loch keser malchus, hanach keser kehuna lezaro shel Aharon. Shehayu omrim imo nishpeis b'modiim v'yevuka shadaver v'lo nimtza v'yibadlu chachme Yisrael b'zam. So he says, you know, you can either have the kingship or you can have the kahuna. You can't have both. Now, ideally, if a person is from the Shevet Levi, he's a Kohen, and Yanai was from the Chashmonai family, so he should have taken the kahuna. But Yehuda ben Gedidya says, you should take the malucha. You should become the king. Why? He's from the Chashmonai. Let him, if he's got to choose one, let him choose to be the Kohen. So he says, leaves the queen of the crown of the priesthood behind. Those are for the descendants of Aaron. Ah, wasn't Yanai a descendant of Aaron through his father Yochanan Hyrcanus, through his father Matisyahu, the grandfather Matisyahu, through his great grandfather Yochanan Kohen Gadol? Wasn't he in fact a king? So the Gemara explains that people would say there were rumors going on around about Yanai. And it was that his mother had been taken captive in Modi'in and ostensibly thus violated. And as a consequence, Yanai was a product of that prohibited union. And although, you know, he could be king, he can't be Kohen Gadol. Now you can imagine Yanai probably wasn't too thrilled about people going around saying these things about him. And the Gemara says that the Yevuka Shadavar, the matter was investigated, and they couldn't prove it. They tried to find witnesses for the event, but none were found. And the Chachamim were thus expelled in the king's rage. That's what the Gemara says. Now, the Gemara then continues. Elazar ben Poira, I said, was a little bit of a kachlefel, liked to stir the pot, apparently. So it wasn't enough for Elazar ben Poira that Yanai expelled Chachmei Yisrael. But let's just leave the story right here before we go further. This already tells us something about Yanai, right? So Yanai is people are saying lots of bad things about him. So he's the king. Now, if he knows, he's not the president. He's the king. Not a chief executive officer. He's the king. And he's not the king of England in the 21st century. He's the king in the first century BC. He has absolute power. So people are talking about him. Big deal. But apparently it was a big deal for him. He couldn't let it go. And thus, he expels Chachmei Yisrael. So this also tells us a little bit about who Yanai was. He wasn't. Didn't seem to be a big tzaddik. A big tzaddik could have said, all right, the people are talking about me, so they're talking about me. Now, Elazar ben Poira doesn't let well enough alone from his perspective. Vayomer Elazar ben Poira, bottom of page 6. Vayomer Elazar ben Poira, liyanai hamelech, yanai hamelech, hed yot shebi Yisrael kachu dino, viyata melech v'kohen gadol, kachu dincha. He says to him, this is what you're going to do? It's just a little slap on the wrist. Stab a person, you know, people would be saying unsubstantiated rumors, you know, that you get a little slap on the wrist. But you're Melech, you're Kohen Gadol, and you're going to just let it go at that? And Yanai says, Taka, you make a good point. And so Yanai then collects as many Chachmei Yisrael as he can find, V'yihargo kol Chachmei Yisrael. And he massacred massacred members of the Sanhedrin, massacred as many Chachmei Yisrael as he could find. V'haya ha'olam mishtomem, and the world was decimated, until Ad Sheba Shimon ben Shetach v'hichzira satar liyoshna, until Shimon ben Shetach came around and restored the crown of the Torah to its rightful place. Okay, so Yanai apparently is a man not just with issues, but he's a man with issues and a lot of and the military might of an army, and those are that's a bad combination. And so he destroys Chachmei, he expels Chachmei Yisrael. He is egged on a little bit. He kills the Chachamim. He massacres them. He doesn't like Yisachar Bar Chai said, so he cuts off his hands. This is a person that seems to be quite cruel and quite difficult. There's another interesting story which is told about Alexander Yanai, and you might be familiar with this story from the Gemara in Masechta Sukkah. The Gemara in Masechta Sukkah tells us that there was a high priest. High priest's name is not given, but there was a high priest who on Sukkot, you know the story of Simchas Beis HaShoeva, that on Sukkot they do Nisuch HaMayim, they have a libation ceremony where the Kohen pours water on the Mizbeach. Happens during Sukkot, right? Nisuch HaMayim. And the Gemara in Sukkah, the Mishnah, the Gemara explains, it tells us that there was a Kohen who, instead of taking the water and pouring it on the Mizbeach, took the water and poured it on his feet. And this was considered a tremendous bizayon. And they pelted him, the people gathered, pelted the Kohen with their esrogim. They took their esrogim and they pelted him, and they pelted him with their esrogim. And the Gemara in Zvachim says that it actually made a dent in the Mizbeach. Now, the Gemara doesn't say, the Talmud doesn't tell us who this unknown, who this nameless Kohen was. But Josephus fills in the blanks. And Josephus says that, and this is accepted even amongst the rabbinic tradition as well, that this Kohen was none other than Alexander Yanai. Right? So Alexander Yanai was apparently pretty cruel, apparently difficult in all the ways that we pointed out. But he also saw himself apparently as a very religious man. He was, he wanted the Kohuna Gedola. Of course, when he did the avoda of the Nisuch HaMayim, he did it in a way which would provoke the ire of the Purushim, of the Pharisees, and he poured it on his feet. Rashi says it has to be that they didn't throw esrogim at him. It means that they threw stones, because esrogim wouldn't dent the Mizbeach. But I saw Rabbi Yitzchak Blau cites another. Forget who he cites in this matter. Write it down here. That this is really a metaphor. It's a this battle here between Yanai and the Purushim, and throwing esrogim at him is really a sort of sense of a metaphor, because the only way that we know that an esrog is an esrog is by the tradition of Torah Sheba'al Peh, the Pharisaic Prushi tradition of the oral law. And so by throwing a srogim at him, they're basically saying, by the Talmud saying they threw a srogim at him, you sort of understand that metaphorically, that they were throwing the arguments of Torah Sheba'al Peh, where he, as a Sadducee, or sympathetic to the Sadducees, was derisive of the oral tradition. But be that as it may, what is clear is that it doesn't seem that Yanai was a big tzaddik. Take a look at page 9. This comes from the War of the Jews, from Josephus. Another little tidbit about Yanai HaMelech. Yanai HaMelech had engaged in quite a few wars and battles, trying to expand the kingdom. what do they say? The more things change, the more they stay the same. Yana HaMelech had a major, major battle with Gaza. This was like it was almost his undoing, and thousands of people were killed, and the people in Gaza stayed strong, and they ultimately conquered them. It was a bloody, bloody situation. So here we are 2,500 years later, and Jews and Gazans are still fighting one another. All right, so take a look here. This is what he says. However, the rest of the Jewish multitude did not lay aside their quarrels with him in his wars. He had people that came along with him, people that were opposed to him. It says, when the foreign auxiliaries were gone, when the mercenaries were gone, but they had a perpetual war with Alexander. So even though they might have supported him, against the enemy and invaders, but when that was over, the internal combustion, re-exploded. So it says here that they had a perpetual war with Alexander until he had slain the greatest part of them and driven them rest into the city of Bernisiles. And when he had demolished that city, he carried the captives to Jerusalem. Nay, his rage was grown so extravagant that his barbarity proceeded to the degree of impiety. For when he had ordered 800 to be hung upon the crosses in the midst of the city, he had the throats of their wives and children cut out before their eyes. But this is not a simple man. And these executions he saw as he was drinking and lying down with concubines. Upon which so deep a surprise seized on the people that 8,000 of his opposers fled away from the very next night. These are Jews, out of all Judea, whose flight was only terminated by Alexander's death. So at last, though not till late, and with great difficulty, he, by such actions, procured quiet to his kingdom and left off fighting anymore. And it's an interesting way to bring quiet to the kingdom. I am reminded, I am not a historian by any stretch of the imagination, but I understand that when Abraham Lincoln said, "A house divided," how's it go? "A house divided against itself shall not stand." He didn't mean that they should compromise. He meant that the Union should fight the Confederacy to the death, and then we'll be a house undivided. We'll be united, once again. So this is So Alexander Yanai, we assume Josephus's account to be accurate, was clearly a tough, cruel man who did a lot of terrible things to the Jewish people, his own people. Now, let's go back to page 3. There's an interesting. Hold on a second. I'm sorry. Bottom of page seven. All right, keep you guessing. Bottom of page 7. Okay. There's a story which has become more recently famous. I think it used to be famous. Then got less famous. It's sort of famous again. And this is the story with one of the people that ran away from Alexander Yanai's rule. There is another account in the Talmud that tells us that. So we see, two different accounts here. We see the story of Elazar ben Poira and, his sort of expelling and executing all the Chachamim. We see the story of Josephus, why a lot of people ran away. But following the rabbinic tradition of his taking aim at the rabbinic leadership and at the Purushim, following story in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, bottom of page 7. And this is actually from the Steinsaltz Gemara, so it has the Hebrew translation interposed. I'm not sure why I didn't give you the English here, but this is what we have. Okay, so story goes as follows. Ma'aseh b'Yoshua ben Parachya, Ma'hi. What's the story with Yoshua ben Parachya? Yoshua ben Parachya was one of the sages who ran away to Egypt, actually, fleeing Alexander Yanai's rule. Kidik katlinhu, when Yanai Amalka l'Rabbanan, as Yanai Amalka was massacring the sages. Azal Yoshua ben Parachya v'yeshu, Yehoshua ben Prachya and his student, Yeshu, stands for Yemach Shemo V'Zichro. May his name be blotted out. It is the rabbinic appellation for Jesus. So Yehoshua ben Prachya and Yeshu run away to Alexandria in Egypt. I just saw in the newspaper that the Grand Shul in Alexandria that's been around for centuries has been renovated. I think there are two Jews in Alexandria. But if you go on a tour, you can go visit the shul in Alexandria. So ki havishlama, when things quieted down between Yanai and the Chachamim, shalach le Shimon ben Shetach. Shimon ben Shetach sent a message to Yehoshua ben Prachya. So again, who was Shimon ben Shetach? Shimon ben Shetach was Shlomtzion's brother, Yanai's brother-in-law. So Shimon ben Shetach had been hidden by his sister, Queen Shlomtzion. And so he was still in Jerusalem, he was in Judea, and he knew that he could attest to the fact that it was time for people to come back. So Shimon ben Shetach sends a message to the Chachamim, including Yehoshua ben Prachya, and he gives a coded message. He says, "Mimi Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh Lichi Alexandria Shal Mitzrayim." From me went out to Alexandria of Mitzrayim. Achosi bali sharui b'tochech v'anochi yoshevet shomema. My sisters are sitting away from me, and I am desolate. Anyway, it was a poetic way of saying, come on back. Okay? So come. So Yehoshua ben Brachia understood the message. He got up, and he came back to Eretz Yisrael, to Judea. V'yisrami lehahu shbiza, and Yehoshua ben Brachia and his student, Yeshu, Jesus, they stop at an inn. Avdu leyikra tuva, Omar, Yehoshua ben Prachya says, Kama yafach sanya zo. What a beautiful inn this is. And he's saying this in the presence of the matron of the inn. What do you call that? The innkeeper, thank you. So he's making these very positive comments about, you know, how wonderful the inn and the innkeeper is. So Amar Lay. So his student, Yeshu, says, Rebbe, I don't think she's so pretty. Eina trutos, she has these big round eyes. Amar Lay, and Yeshu critiques Yehoshua ben Prachya's taste in women. So Yehoshua ben Prachya says to him, Rasha, evil one, kacha ta'osek, that's where your mind goes. When I say this is a nice inn, you think I'm commenting about the innkeeper? Apik arba mea shipuri v'shamte, and he excommunicates him. So asal akame, so Yeshu comes back, kama zimnin a few times, amarlo, and he says, kablan, accept me back. I want to repent. Lo have komashkech be Yehoshua ben Prachya did not accept his repentance. Yom achad havekakari, happened one day, Yehoshua ben Prachya was reading Kriya Shema, like every good Jew should read Kriya Shema once in the morning, once at night. Asa lekameh, Yeshu shows up, one more stab at the apple, and he's going to try to re-accepted and repent. Savar lekibule, and Yehoshua ben Prachya said, today is the day we're going to make up, I'm going to welcome him back to the fold. So, ach vile biyadeh, but he was in the middle of saying Kriya Shema. So when Yeshu shows up, he gestured with his hand. So who, Yeshu Savar, Mitche Kadachile, he thought when he was gesturing with his hand, it was, you know, be gone. Right? It's like, if I do this, if you ask me a question and I do this, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Yeah, but if you go to Israel and you do this, little kids do that, it doesn't mean I don't know. It means, I think, something along the lines of, you know, go away, or something like that. So, you know, gestures can mean different things, right? So he, you know, I guess he did this, right? And he thought that this didn't mean chakeh, wait a second. He thought this meant go away. So Yeshua goes away, and the Gemara says, Azal Zakaf Mitche Kadachile, Azal Zakaf Levinte, Behishtachavela. So Yeshua went out, and he went to worship Avodah Zarah. Okay? So the Gemara concludes, Amar Le, Yeshua said, Kach Mikublani. So he said, come, what are you doing? He says, Kach Mikublani Mimcha, I learned this from you, Yehoshua ben Prachya. You're blaming me? I learned it from you. Somebody who sins and causes other sin can't do tshuva. And the sage said that Yeshu caused terrible things not only for himself, but also caused others to sin as well. And some suggest that this is not any Yeshu, but the Yeshu of the Jesus of Christianity. Now, this story is very interesting in and of itself, in terms of rabbinic culpability for the foundations of Christianity. But that's not why I brought this story. I brought this story to think about Yanai HaMelech. You can understand from this story why Yeshu didn't come back. But the bigger question is, why did people follow him? Why did people follow down the path? It says here, Hesus Vehidiach, he caused many others to follow his path. And the answer goes back really to Yanai. Yanai created a atmosphere of fear and trepidation and trembling. And actually, one could even argue that that came from the religious establishment, even though he was opposed by the Prushim, but he still stood in the position of Kohen Gadol, in the position of Melech. Why do the people follow Yeshu down this path? Yanai created an absolute reign of terror. An absolute reign of terror. And more than that, he coupled it with a very powerful pair. And that is, the Nazis when the Nazis came into various Jewish towns, villages, cities, they took the religious leadership first, and I met people who testified to this, that they killed off the leadership first. There's a guy in my old shul in Manhattan, his name was Israel Lieberman. His father he's since passed away, but Lieberman is a survivor of the Lodz ghetto. And his father was one of the either the rabbinic or lay leaders of the community. And when the Nazis came in, the first thing they did was they took his father and other leaders and they killed them. Because if you don't have religious leadership, you don't have civilian leadership, it makes it easier. So Yanai, he did two things. He had a reign of terror, created fear amongst the people, and he decimated the religious leadership. And so the people were now ripe for following, a purported Messiah or a purported new way of life, even if not a purported Messiah. So if you think about it, and this is from, if we look at the story, not about Yeshu and about Yeshua, but Alexander Yanai's contribution, this whole thing occurs not just because Alexander Yanai expelled some people and this strange story happened along the way. That explains Yeshu's departure. But the people that follow him, well, that is a consequence of Yanai's impact on the community. So Yanai, and from all these perspectives, is pretty tough, pretty terrible. And there are more stories, maybe even evil. But then we get the strangest of all stories. Now go back to page one. The Gemara tells us that you don't have this in front of you. There's the Yerushalmi, and the Yerushalmi says that there were 300 Nazirim, Nazarites, who came to Shimon ben Shetach looking for a way out of their situation because they couldn't afford the cost of the karbanos which are necessary to bring at the conclusion of their nazirus. So the Gemara says that Shimon ben Shetach was able to find a way to cancel 150 of them, but the other 150 were stuck. So his brother-in-law, Yanai HaMelech, came by, and Shimon told him that there were 300 Nazirim who needed to bring 900 Karbanos. Shimon ben Shetach said, I took care of half of them. Why don't you take care of the cost? You'll cover the cost of the rest. So Yanai heard this, and he said, fine, I'll do it. I'll cover the cost of the 450 Nazirim who need to pay for their karbanos. That doesn't sound like a terribly bad guy at all. The story continues Yanai found out that Shimon ben Shetach didn't pay for one of them, not one. So he was annoyed by this. And he says, you know, you fooled me. So Shimon ben Shetach said, I didn't actually fool you. I took care of them. I said, I'll take care of them. I found a way to undo their Nazirite oaths, so retroactively, they're not responsible for it. So on my end, I took care of these 150 Nazirim. They don't have to bring the Karbanos. So you have to pay for your 450. So Yanai's men brought him. He challenged him on lying, and he explained himself. And he was upset, but that was the end of the story. So this doesn't seem to account. It doesn't sound like the same Yanai who was upset at a guy who asked him about lamb and meat, and he cut off both his arms. There's another story in the Gemara, and the Gemara tells us. This is page 1 in your Gemara. Yanai Malko Malkasa, Yanai and his wife, the queen, Shlom Tzion, Krichu Rifta Bahade Hadade, they were breaking bread together. Umidikata Luhu Rabbanan, Lohavile Inish Levruche. So Yanai was going around the table, and he was looking for somebody to lead the benching. So he looks around to his right, he looks around to his left. Usually, we have my house. We often have try as often as possible to have guests over. And usually, we have guests over. I have two boys and one girl. We don't qualify for a zimun. But usually, when I have guests, so we can have a zimun. So I asked one of the guests to do the honors and lead the zimun. So Yana is looking around, and he doesn't see anybody around to lead the zimun. Midakata lehu l'rabbanan lo havile inish levruche lehu. He's looking around, and he realizes, I massacred all those members of the Sanhedrin. Anybody who would be available to lead the benching, is not available. So he's in a quandary here. So the Gemara says, Amar lehu d'baisu, he asks his wife, Man yahiv le'gavar d'mavarech lan, anybody who can lead the benching? So Amralei, so she says, I happen to know somebody. Ishtabala li di'i maisino lach gavra delo mitzar tole. But you have to swear to me that if I produce the person, you're not going to lay a finger on him. So Yanai takes the vow, Ishtabala, Aitise l'Shimon ben Shetach. She goes and finds her brother Shimon ben Shetach, who she had been concealing all this time from Yanai's wrath, from Yanai's sword. And she produces him. I see, say, le Shimon ben Shetach achua. Osvi ben Didei, Yanai puts him in the seat of honor between him and Shlom Tzion, his wife. That's Shimon's sister. Amarlei, chazeis kami yikar avid nalach. So Yanai says, you see what great honor I'm giving to you? Amar lei lavat komarket lei, you don't give me any honor. Ela oraisehi demokrali, the Torah gives me honor. Dechsiv salsaleo Torah memeka techabdecha kisechabkena. And he cites a verse in the Torah about, the Torah gives us honor. So Amar lei, kachazis de la mekabel maris. So Yanai looks to his wife and says, see, I told you they don't respect me. They deserve to be killed. Look, he doesn't respect me. But he took a vow, he swore he wasn't going to do anything, so he didn't do anything. So the Gemara then says, Yavdu le kasa levruche, Yanai brings a cup, to Shimon ben Shetach, and he says, do the honors. Amar hechi avrich, how can I possibly lead the benching? I didn't eat. You invited me to bench, but you didn't give me any food. So, you know, maybe give him meat or lamb, goat, whatever. So he says, don't worry about it. Shaisi lahu kasa, he drinks the cup. Yavulei kasa achrina. Ubarich, they bring him another cup. And on the second cup, he now does the honors and leads the zimun and benches on behalf of everybody. So Amar Rabbi Abba Breda, Rabbi Chia Baraba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shimon ben Shetach, the Avid Lagarme. What Shimon ben Shetach did, halachically speaking, by joining in this meal, by just drinking a cup of wine, is halachically suspect. And the Gemara goes on to a whole discussion here about what you have to eat or drink in order to be considered part of a meal, in order to then qualify for leading the benching. But that's what Shimon ben Shetach did. So again, this Gemara has to be understood on its own, but I cite this Gemara to give us some insight into Yanai HaMelech. Yanai HaMelech is concerned about who's leading the benching? It doesn't make sense. What? It doesn't make sense. Okay. So before we go any further, can anybody want to take a stab at this Gemara? I guess that's not a good word to use when we're talking about Yanai HaMelech, but you know, any thoughts about how to understand this Gemara? What? Yanai is setting.
Settings. Like he did in the first story, to show that he's really good.
Okay, so Yanai doesn't really care about people leading benching, but he cares about who's leading the benching at his table, right? If I have a vagabond leading the benching at my table, that might work according to the halacha, but if I have the chief rabbi of Israel at my table leading the benching, then that's a big honor for me. So Yanai sought the approval of the Sanhedrin. Now, they didn't approve of him, so he killed them. But anybody who was left, you know, if he could get them to bench at his table and to do Zimun, and maybe even, according to some, do the Birchas Oreach, so then this would be a great honor. So he really wasn't so concerned about benching at all. So from that perspective, this story is not problematic. Because this isn't about a religious man who is looking to bench. This is just about somebody who is seeking affirmation in the community.
Maybe if you said, you give him a reason of why he's on that, and say, okay, come on down, he's still kind of attached to me, but I did for my reason, and I don't see a problem.
Right, so in other words, maybe this is a way of him doubling down and saying, I am right, I am the king. The Sanhedrin to come at me and not give me the appropriate due, they have no right. And as king, I can, and so he's sort of like doubling down on that. And he didn't do anything wrong by saying that I'm leading, you know, I'm looking for somebody to lead the benching. Don't think that I'm a not religious person. No, I acted entirely right. And maybe these other actions also, maybe he was a cruel king, but a king, even according to halacha, you know, if somebody is, I mean, he can't be cruel for no reason at all. But you know, we have stories in the Tanakh already of kings acting in a way which one can at least challenge whether they were, you know, whether the challenge to their authority warranted, you know, the actions that they took. So maybe Yanai is saying, listen, this is a challenge to my authority. A king has the right to defend his authority, even on pain of death. So maybe this is really reframing everything about Yanai. Yeah, what did you want to say?
I mean, it's very similar. You said, but it's slightly different that if he is a Tzeduki, or if he follows that thing, so then killing everybody else was necessary because they were, in his mind, not following halacha or doing something that was incorrect. And I don't know, but it could be that doing Zimun is something that a Tzeduki would do as well, and therefore he was sincere in that as a Tzeduki.
Right. So you're suggesting similar lines that this was somehow establishing the fact that he was right in what he did, and suggesting that by doing this, you know, he is demonstrating the rightness of his previous actions, as horrific as they might sound to us. Yeah, Alan.
Well, basically, by playing both the role of king and priest, he's using the trapping of religion to increase his worldly power. He's using his worldly power to increase the intimacy of his spiritual world. Yeah. So they're basically only being useful to him to the extent they're serving him as an individual in whatever capacity. Just sounds very familiar.
Okay. All right. Okay. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? Okay. I want to show you. Take a look at page 10. This is the Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota, middle of page 10. Again, I'm sorry, I don't have the English on this one. Gemara in Sota says the following. Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak. That which is hidden is hidden, and that which is exposed is exposed. We'll just leave that aside. They tell the following story. Amar la Yanai Malka. Yanai Malka, Yanai the king, said to his wife on his deathbed, Al tisyari bin haprushim. Don't be concerned about the Pharisees. Velo mimi she'enam prushim, nor with the tzedukim. Ela min hatzvuin shedomin leprushin shemaseim kemasa zimri. But rather, what you should be concerned about are people that are hypocrites, people that dress themselves up like prushim, right? But they act in a terrible way. Maseim kemasa zimri. They do the avera like zimri. Umevakshim schar Pinchas. But they want to be rewarded like Pinchas. Right. So what's he telling his wife on his deathbed? He's telling his wife on his deathbed that the most important thing is integrity. Okay? So here we have the story of the benching. We have a story about integrity. The story about these, the 300. He paid for half of the Nazirs to give their karbanos. He's painting a very different picture of a man than we saw earlier. At the very least, these are either, two different people, bipolar, right? Or very complicated. Take a look at the bottom of page 10. This is from Megillas Tanis. This is a scroll that was put together during the time of the Chachamim that laid out all the days of the minor holidays. Like the days that they don't say Tachanun. Not just at Landau's that they don't say Tachanun, but even the other places where they don't say Tachanun, right? So take a look at the bottom of page 12. So it says, Lama Shina Zamizeh Ella, this is the second of Shvat. Berishon Meis Hordos, what? Bottom of page 10. Bottom of page 10. Megillas Tanis, 2 Shvat. Bottom of page 10. So he says, on this day, Yanai HaMelech, the second of Shvat, died. Simcha hi lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, kishirishon mistalkin. It is a day of great joy when evil people leave the world. Amru, they said, kishichola Yanai HaMelech, when Yanai HaMelech got sick, and he was dying, shalach v'tafas shivim zekenim ezikne Yisrael, he took 70 of the elders, and he threw them into jail. Chavsham deves asurin. Amar lo lasar beis asurin, said to the jail master, to the prison master, im mesei harog et hazkenim. If I die, kill all the zakenim. V'ad sheYisrael smeichem li yadvu al ribosam. In other words, if all these people die on the day of his death, then the Jews will be mourning and not happy. He wants to sort of mask their joy of his death by creating sadness. So people will be sad on the day of his death. So, Amru Isha Tova Haisalol Yanai, but Yanai had a good wife, Shalom Tzion, Vishalminin Shma, her name is Shalom, is peace, Shalom Tzion. Ukishemes, when he died, Salka Tabaso, she didn't tell anybody. She took his ringlet, his signet ring, Me'al Yado, Shalchal Abes Sarasurin, she sent a message with the signet ring of the king brandished into the wax. Amra lo, Rabcha b'chalom, hitiroscha hazakenim. She basically said, let all the rabbis out. Hitiron v'holchu lahen l'batayan. He let the rabbis out. V'achar kachamra, mesiana emalach. And then she announced that her husband died.
Also, Ayom Shemes Yana Yamelech Hasel Yom Tov. And on that day, it was a big Yantiv. So that day, even if you're not at Landau's, you can say you don't have to say Tachamim. So we get like there's sort of mixed messages here all over the place regarding Yanai. He was cruel. He was not cruel. He was a religious man. He was thoughtful. He was concerned about integrity. So, I think that there are two ways to answer our question here.
And he didn't kill his wife.
Right, and he didn't kill his wife, even though she was a Prushi, and she had saved her own brother. Right. So, we have a lot of mixed messages here about Yanai. So one way to look at Yanai is really the quintessential man in denial. He totally did not see himself. Totally did not see himself. On the one hand, he's chopping off arms, and on the other hand, he's asking what time is Shkia, or the equivalent thereof. On the one hand, he's massacring the Sanhedrin. On the other hand, he's concerned about Zimun. It's a corruption from within, and it is so corrupt. It's like it's worse than somebody who's just a not religious dictator despot. Okay, I get that picture, but the guy who professes to be so religious and so concerned about Zimun, this is the same person who's running around chopping off arms. This is significant, not just because it tells us something about Yanai, but I believe the Talmud records this as a cautionary tale for us. Because although hopefully none of us are living on those extremes, we are liable, we are vulnerable to that type of hypocrisy, where we're so concerned, about matzah on Pesach, so concerned that our houses don't have any chametz, and on the other hand, we treat another human being in a way which we wouldn't want to be treated. Yeah.
Several years ago, the chaplain of the prison system, the rabbi, spoke to us here, and he related the story. He was very amused that of some of these people that he ministered to, murderers, swindlers, this and that, buried and went to the docks. They were very careful about what they wanted to have served in jail.
Right. To that point, when I was, it must have been 10 or 11 years ago, so there was something that came up in the newspapers, and there were people and it was about the fact how there was kosher food in Sing Sing upstate, and there were minyanim, and there were daf yomi, and I made the point, sort of what Norm is making, and I pointed out in the drusha that while it's good for people to want to do the right thing, but there's something there's something that smacks a little hypocrisy here. And a guy came over to me after shul, and he said, "Yeah, but at least they could do tshuva. At least they could do tshuva. At least they could do tshuva." Okay, but there's there's an issue of people being so concerned about badats and all these things, but at the end of the day, defrauding the community of millions of dollars or the equivalent thereof. And so Yanai HaMelech, although his actions are such wide extremes from one another, they are pointed, and they are a pointed message for us who don't live in the extremes. And who does Yanai emerge from? Yanai emerges from the Beis Chashmonai, who said, "Mi Lashem Elai," who said, stood up for the rights and responsibilities of traditional Judaism. But in the end, like the Ramban said, after they threw off the dictators, after they threw away the Greeks, the Hashmonaiah family clung to power when they shouldn't have. And so Yanai HaMelech, his very cruel expression of that corruption already might find its seeds in the fact that the Hashmonaiah family, after Yehuda Maccabee threw off the Yevanim, maybe for a year or two, they get things into place and then give up the Melucha. But generation after generation, the Kohanim, the Hashmonaim, kept that power. And when the religious authority holds on to the political authority, really vice versa as well, when the political authority holds on to the religious authority, then as the Torah has it set up, that's a seed of corruption, that's a seed of destruction. And as the Ramban says, because the Hashmonaim did not give up the Melucha, it was ultimately their undoing. And perhaps we see their undoing in full force and fleshed out fully in the actions of Alexander Yanai. He was at the same time cruel and insensitive and evil, or at least evil actions, and at the very same time he was running around concerned about Birchas Hamazon and the size of the, you know, the size of your cup for Kiddush. So that's one way of looking at it. And that would lead, that would seem, see Yanai as a very, very complicated person who unfortunately would have, his message would, I think, be relevant for us in the way that I just outlined. But there's another way to look at it. On the bottom of page 12, there's a sefer called Megala Amukos, written in the 17th century. And you can... we're not going to go through the whole thing, but actually take a look at the middle of page 13. In interpreting verses of the Chumash, he says that certain psukim in the Chumash are meant to relate to various points in Jewish history. So in the middle of this page, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's like smack dab in the middle of the page. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, B'tchila Shlichuso, Hashem said to Moshe at the beginning of his journey, at the beginning of his service, Mazeh Biyadecha, what is this staff in your hand? K'siv Mazeh, Remez Al HaTorah Shelo Tishtakach HaTorah Shu Sod Min Matei Moshe. So he says that this is a sort of a reference, Mazeh Biyadecha, this Mazeh, what is this? Not as a question, but as a statement. This in your hand is the Torah hinting that the staff of the Torah, the Torah which is hinted to in the staff in his hand, will never be forgotten amongst the Jewish people. So So Moshe comes and he prays for the generation of Yanai HaMelech because he saw in the future that there would be a little ember left in the during the period of Yanai HaMelech. And Moshe wanted to go into Israel in order to lahavir ra'ot ha'ish b'lial Elazar ben Perea v'ra'ot Yochanan Kohen Gadol. He wanted to somehow undo and to preempt what Alexander Yanai would do in the future, and Elazar ben Porira, through his merit, through his chus of entering Eretz Yisrael in combination with the holiness of Eretz Yisrael, his prayers would preempt that. Hera HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the bold face, God showed him, Moshe saw by a prophecy, Al Yedei Kos Shel Bracha Yischaret Yanai HaMelech. Via the cup of wine of benching, Yanai HaMelech would regret the evil that he had perpetrated. Al Amaseh Hara She'asa Sheharag Kol Chachmei Yisrael. That he decimated the religious life, and he physically killed the Sanhedrin.
L'kach hischil Moshe l'hispalaloso ha'es, and therefore Moshe prayed for this point in time. So, again, this is part of a larger interpretation of Pesukim, but the Megala Muko suggests that that Gemara about Yana HaMelech being concerned about the cup of Birkas HaMazon is not Yana HaMelech as a bipolar or hypocritical Jew, but Yana HaMelech did tshuva. That Yana HaMelech repented. That Yana HaMelech changed at the end of his life. And indeed, he tells his according to one version that we saw, he tells his wife, integrity is the most important thing. Integrity is the most important thing. Now, hold on a second. I want to clarify something here. So, let's take that on its face value for a second. What is it about, we say on Yom Kippur that a person can do tshuva a moment before his death or her death. And that's why a person should take every moment to see their life as that I could die in a minute, and therefore I should live well now, because in a minute from now, who knows where I will be. So let's take this Gemara at face value. Let's take Gemara at face value, that he did tshuva at the end of his life. And all that stuff, cutting off the arms and this and that, he led a terrible life. But at the end, Birkas HaMazon brought him back. Why is it that Birkas HaMazon brought him back? Let's take it at face value. He repented because of Kos Birkas HaMazon. Right? He brought back Shimon ben Shetach. He didn't kill him. He was good to his word. He didn't kill his wife for having hit him all these years. Shimon ben Shetach tells Yoshua ben Prachya to come back because Yanai had made peace with the Prussian. What is it about Birkas HaMazon? So Birkas HaMazon, I don't think it's Birkas HaMazon per se. It's what Birkas HaMazon represents. So Birkas HaMazon is the paradigm of Hakaras HaTov, of gratitude. And of all things, why would gratitude have been something that would have turned the steeled heart of Yanai HaMelech around? And I think the answer is because Yanai HaMelech is the son of Yochanan Hyrcanus, the grandson of Shimon Matisyahu, the great-grandson of Matisyahu, great-grandson of Yochanan Koivado. Who were the Chashmonaim, if not the paradigms of Hakaras HaTov, of gratitude? That's what the whole Chanukah is. Chanukah is Lahodos Ulahalel. That's what the Chashmonaim instituted. A holiday of gratitude and gratefulness to the Ribbono Shel Olam, in their instance, for having thrown off the Greeks and reestablished sovereign rule and fidelity to Torah and mitzvot. Gratitude. Hakaras HaTov. Hoda'a. That's what we say at the end of Al Hanisim. Kedei Lahodos Ulahalel. The whole thing is about gratitude. If we can take this Gemara at face value, and the Megala Amukos' interpretation that Yanai HaMelech turned at the end of his life on the cup of benching means that the notion of gratitude, something that was inherent within him, it was part of his DNA, he was a Hasmonean after all. This was getting back to the core of who he was. And gratitude and gratefulness have an extraordinary capacity, a transformative capacity on a person. Sure, we've seen it probably with people in our own lives. And in our own lives, when we feel great of gratefulness and gratitude, we can look at life entirely differently. It can transform our experience of living. And so Yanai HaMelech, says the Megala HaMukos, to Tshuva. That Gemara about the Birkas HaMazon is Yanai getting back to his essential self. Why is it, or how do we see that within rabbinic tradition, the power, the transformative power of Hakaras HaTov. Torah tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu had a great, had an excellent, wonderful father-in-law. His name was Yisro,
right? Yisro. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asked the question, what did Yisro do to deserve to be the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu? Right, the Torah says, Hosein Moshe. It was an honor to be Moshe Rabbeinu's father-in-law. So you might remember the Midrash that says that Yisro was one of the advisors of Paro. And when he heard that Paro, his plans for the Jewish people, he ran away. He ran away. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that it was this koach, this power, this understanding of gratitude and gratefulness that drove Yisro to leave a very plumb position. Right? He understood that without Yosef, without the Jewish people, there would be no Egypt. There would be no Paro. There would be no job to speak of. That the Mitzrayim at that point in history only existed by the good works of Yosef earlier. So Yisro had an understanding of what it was, his sense of gratitude moved him to take an action which was entirely against his self-interest. Gratitude is a powerful, powerful, midah. It's a powerful character trait. And it can be transformative. And this is why we all know that the Jews are called Yehudim, not Yisraelim. We're called Yehudim from the Lashon of Yehuda, which is gratitude, hoda'ah, gratefulness. And the Jewish people become known as Yehudim from the time of Judea, right? Of Yehuda, during this period of time. Right? Slightly earlier. I'm going to restate that. Purim time already, Jews are known as Yehudim. But Jews are known as Yehudim from the Lashon of Hoda'ah, gratitude and gratefulness. And Purim and Hanukkah are actually twin sisters in this regard. They're all about the notion of gratitude and gratefulness. So it seems to me that Yanai HaMelech is worth thinking about this time of year, because he created the environment within the Jewish community that could allow a Jesus to, in fact, have an impact. He made them by creating a vulnerable people, vulnerable to the message of a savior. And on the other hand, Alexander Yanai is also worth thinking about, because his life is at once a tragedy. He is the end of the period of the Chashmonaim and brings it to an end in a very tragic way. But he also, from this perspective, gives us great promise. The promise that if we live a life of gratitude, we can transform not only ourselves, but we can transform the world around us. And that is indeed, I think, the underlying message of Hanukkah. The message of gratitude to the Ribbono Shel Olam and living a life of gratitude, enabling us thus to be better bein adam l'makom and bein adam l'chaverah. Pause here.